Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday, August 6th. 62 degrees right now in Old Town Park City under smoky skies. We've got 57 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Thursday. Of course, we're going to be dealing with more hazy sunshine across the area. We've got that northwesterly flow still in place, and that continues to bring down some of that wildfire smoke, particularly from the fires across the Pacific Northwest. Now, as we go throughout the afternoon, we'll see that air quality at times jumping up into the cold orange range. That's unhealthy for sensitive groups, but most of the day will likely be spent in the moderate category. Still, be aware of those smoky skies out there for us this afternoon. Temperatures will start to warm up now compared to where they have been the past couple of days. So in Park City, we're looking at high temperatures likely climbing to around 90 degrees this afternoon. We'll climb into the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. But it gets warmer. The core of that heat dome shifts over Utah once again as we go into your Friday and Saturday. So you know what that means. Mostly sunny skies, dry conditions, but those temperatures will start to climb. We're looking at highs in the low 90s for us as we go into your Saturday here, or your Friday across Park City. We'll be in the low to mid 90s for your Saturday afternoon. And then for the Heber Valley, we're around 100 degrees for your Friday. We'll stay around 100 to 101 as we go into your Saturday as well. Now, we may see a few more clouds building in by late Saturday night. We're going to begin to try to tap into a little moisture as we go into your Sunday. That's going to come in from the south. It's going to mainly mean the chance of a few high base pop-up storms developing, mainly with some gusty winds and lightning to begin with. Again, the first chance you'll be able to see that will likely be on Sunday afternoon. And then we'll see some slightly better chances of isolated showers and thunderstorms that could produce some downpours and isolated flash flooding that will arrive as we go into your Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. We could definitely use some moisture. I think the chances of increasing for some monsoon moisture arrives, especially as we get towards the middle and latter parts of next week. High temperatures again going into next week will cool down with the clouds and the rain chances back into the 80s in Park City and near 90 in the Heber Valley. Let's get your latest forecast for the Wasatch back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Chris Robinson. We'll recap yesterday's meeting. From the Park City Board of Realtors, CEO Jennifer Amandi and Board President Gretchen Hudgens with a look at the second quarter report. And from Park City Ski and Snowboard, Executive Director Elias Lewis with details on the upcoming Park City Ski and Snowboard Barbecue. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Dr. Tonmoy Laskar, Assistant Professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Utah, who says that these gamma ray bursts are more powerful than the entire output of our sun. Then, with AI in the current media spotlight, a conversation with Blaise Aguirre-Aragas, a vice president and fellow at Google, about the concept of intelligence. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, occurred every Thursday at 9 a.m. Park City is looking into bringing a thermal energy network to town, which heats and cools buildings using the earth. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the underground systems are gaining popularity in the Intermountain West.
Park City residents and visitors may have noticed a mobile drill rig near the corner of Kearns Boulevard and Bonanza Drive, its mast rising above the tree line. City Lands and Sustainability Director Luke Carton said the truck is drilling a 500-foot borehole to see if a thermal energy network is possible in the area. It's a more energy-efficient way to heat and cool buildings.
You view it as almost like we're sticking a temperature probe down 500 feet just to see what's going on down there. We're also seeing what does all that subsurface geology actually look like.
Jennifer Eden is a senior climate and clean energy associate from Utah Clean Energy. She said buildings are typically heated and cooled using air and electricity. But that isn't very efficient because air temperatures can be extremely hot or cold. A geothermal system, on the other hand, uses water and Earth's temperature. Eden said it works by circulating water through pipes 10 to 20 feet underground. The water starts in the building, absorbing the summer or winter air. It's then pumped underground, where the temperature is around 50 degrees Fahrenheit year-round. Eden said it takes just a few minutes for the water to release or absorb heat before it's pumped back up and the process repeats. The result is a more efficient system and a lower energy bill.
You're using 50 degree temperatures to help cool your very hot house. So those are 2 to 3 times more efficient than using the air.
Carton said Park City's police station, post office, city hall, and the Three Kings water treatment plant are heated and cooled with geothermal. Now the city is looking into creating a thermal energy network, which heats and cools multiple buildings.
The larger one of these could scale, the more efficient they could become.
That's something Colorado Mesa University has done. Its geothermal system is the largest in the Intermountain West. Capital Planning and Sustainability Vice President Kent Marsh said the system has reduced the university's carbon footprint by almost 18,000 metric tons annually. It's also saved nearly $12 million since 2008. The school completed a system expansion about 2 months ago, adding miles of pipes going up to 600 feet underground. The network now heats and cools 79% of campus buildings, or over 1.8 million square feet. Marsh said while the upfront costs can be expensive, the energy and dollar savings are worth it.
The stuff that we installed back in 07 has absolutely paid for itself. The new drill field that we just installed beneath our flagpole and our rugby pitch, it's going to take 10, 12 years for the university to pay that upfront investment back.
Eden agreed the systems are a great investment, lasting more than 4 times as long as an air conditioning unit. She said the cost to build them could also go down with new innovation. The University of Utah is developing a smaller system called a geospiral that only requires 8-foot holes. Still, as networks require drilling, Eden said they're best for new build developments or big remodels, and more colleges, cities, and developments are looking into it. The Point Development in Draper, Utah conducted a feasibility study to see if a thermal grid would be possible on the 600-acre area. Eden said Weber State University also recently implemented a thermal system into its Lindquist Hall.
Post-construction, their energy use intensity, so the amount of energy per square foot, was reduced by more than 80%. Their electricity use without solar was reduced by 55%.
Carton said other Colorado mountain towns are considering geothermal. According to the Aspen Times, Aspen School District completed a 1,000-foot geothermal bore test in July. As for Park City, the borehole test on the Bonanza Park 5-acre site will take around 5 days to complete. Carton said he and his team hope to bring their findings to the Park City Council by the fall. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap of the meeting is County Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Leslie.
The council was scheduled to vote on the $150 million Basin Recreation bond last night, whether or not to put it on the ballot for voters to decide, but there's been a surge in negative feedback from voters. So what's happened here?
Well, Basin Rec did some surveying and of the types of new facilities they might need or want or might be desirable, and they came up with a pretty big wish list that involved building 2 new facilities that would total about 200,000 square feet, as I recall, one at Silver Creek Village and one over Klein Dolly. And then when they did the math, they thought, well, geez, it might have cost up to $150 million. And so they came before us and said, what do you think? And I wouldn't say there was a surge of, there was only like 1 or 2 people that were at our meeting last night at the hearing. And so it wasn't, and it was in the basin. It wasn't like we chose it at a bad time and wrong location. I think the general feeling is that it's too much. I think the council felt that way. And when pressed, the Administrative Control Board were saying, we're open to adjustment. They weren't coming in there trying to press them. Do you really want this? I mean, if you think we're out of touch, we, the council, and that the public really wants this, and we'll get out of the way. So, no, we're not really sure either. And so that was a dead giveaway. So I think that, the $150 million, that's 3 times our countywide geo bond for open space. I mean, that takes all the air out of the room for any other bonding. And I think it would probably have a very difficult time passing. So I said they're going to regroup and come back with a more realistic plan. And it'll have a bond limit.
Yeah. So when does this all have to be decided in order to put it on November's ballot?
I think in the next few weeks, Leslie.
Yeah.
Not many days. You know, it's, I mean, it's not like it has to be on this ballot, but they've got momentum and done a lot of work. And if they're going to, I think in the time remaining in order to be timely on getting it on the ballot, they can come up with something. The council, we're pleased with their thought process. It's just it was too much.
Mm.
And even they weren't, you know, all in on it. It's more testing the waters.
We've seen both Park City School District and Wasatch County School District issue what are called lease revenue bonds, basically bonding without having to go to the voters. Is this something that the Basin Recreation has authority to do as well?
I don't know about that. I would, as their governing board, I would discourage that. It's not so much, I mean, in my opinion, that we're afraid of the people. Of our citizens, I don't want to be part of something. Well, we don't think the public wants it, so we're going to sneak one through. That's not the approach. So we're here to serve the public, and hopefully we'd serve something up that the public would accept. They have in the past when we've had similar bond measures or ballot measures. And we've been a little nervous, and they've still come through with like 3/4 support, plus or minus. Well, that's what we want here. We don't want to be on the margin or trying to pull something off that the public wouldn't like.
Is there a risk with putting out a bond that voters reject? I mean, does it use...
Well, I think there is, especially if it's like... you know, way out there and we serve something up that's dead on arrival, then people question our judgment. Why couldn't you read the tea leaves better? Why did you serve it up? And there'll be other things that we need the bond for to take, you know, that $150 million, it's a lot of, I mean, you think about that in perspective, that's probably the sum total that we've bonded for in the county on all open space. Over 2 decades.
So what do you expect Basin Recreation will do? Cut one of the two field houses or downsize both of them, or any idea?
I don't think you can downsize them both and do both. I suspect it'll be to choose one, and I think maybe around that $50 million number is probably where they'll light, but it's hard to say. We'll have another discussion in a few weeks. I think it's on the 19th.
All right. Let's see. The council approved the Summit County Housing Authority strategic plan. You're worried about some inconsistency on the county's part, that the housing authority says one thing and the council another. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah, well, I say we're schizophrenic, meaning we're split-minded. We think we have an affordable housing deficit, and we set goals, and then we work with Park City for a while about on a housing authority, then that went in the ditch. Then we create our own, and we empower it, and we set it loose as an independent body, and then we reserve this right to approve a strategic plan and goals, and in it, it has a lot of pretty strong intent, you know, objectives to make building affordable housing easier, including things like creating an overlay, creating a special zone, making it more streamlined, speeding up the process, allowing for greater density, all these things. And it, you know, so that's what one side of our mind says when we're split-minded. And then the other side, when it comes down to receiving a project that might take advantage of that intent, then we say, oh, no, we can't do that. It's going to induce growth. We got too damn many people, blah, blah, blah. So we're split-minded, and that's what I was trying to point out.
Yeah. There was a lot of discussion about how and whether the housing authority should be independent. What do you think?
I think it's too late. I think that's what we've done. We, At most places, I think the housing authority is independent. What sort of surprised me is I had heard that they were rendering an opinion on a particular project, and I thought, wow, that's weird that an appendage or an extension of the county is going to take a position for or again a specific project. And they said, oh, that's typical. This housing authority now is going to be, you know, like Nuzzles and Co. It's going to advocate for housing. That's what it does. That's its business. And then our job is to, I guess, react to what their advocacy, even though we created it.
All right. So you think it's okay that the housing authority talked with developers for, you know, about getting an endorsement before they went ahead and applied? I mean, you think that's their role?
Well, that's what I'm told. It's okay. I guess it happens. Yeah, even in the strategic plan, there was a link to a website where you could evaluate. There was a system for evaluating properties that might be suitable for affordable housing, and it had all these metrics, and you fill in these assumptions, and it'll give you a score and say, hey, is this a property, you know, that might pass muster as a site for affordable housing? And I think I'm a believer that we need more affordable housing. So I'm not faulting that we've created a housing authority, nor that they have a goal to create more. What I am faulting is that since we're the instigators of this, that we stay the course when we set in motion to do something, you know, have a goal of 1,500 units, and then say, well, that wasn't really our goal, or we don't like that now, or we backpedal, and it just creates a lot of frustration.
So just because the Housing Authority did endorse a project before it came through the normal planning channels, it doesn't really matter because you're independent and they're independent, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I can't even tell you what specific project. I just heard that they were endorsing a project, and it first caught me off guard until I remembered how independent they really are and that their mission is to promote housing, affordable housing. So yeah, if it's a nail and they're a hammer, they're gonna like this. Yeah, this is a nail. We like that.
Okay. I think it was the Lincoln View project that they were discussing.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. The council also heard the clerk's proposals to update the business license code for the first time in more than a decade. Any major changes that business owners should be aware of?
It was just a work session, and the version of the update that we got wasn't redlined, and there was a mistake in sending it out as a PDF that removed all the changes, and I think it's too early to necessarily say that business owners need to be aware of anything. I think stay tuned.
Okay, it looked like many of the changes were either to update terminology or comply with changes in state law, so nothing too significant.
Yeah, there was that, and then what I thought was interesting, which I'd never contemplated, was this license review board, and this process by which if you feel aggrieved that you haven't got the license you wanted on the terms you wanted, you could appeal to this appointed board, and then if you didn't like that board's rendering, then you could appeal to the county manager, and if you didn't like his rendering, then you're done. But at least there was some mechanism to seek redress if you think you've been wronged.
Okay. The county council toured the 910 Ranch yesterday morning with Morgan County leaders. Why did you invite them over?
Well, about 1,800 acres of it are in Morgan County, and we've been trying to build a better relationship with Morgan County. They have at times felt like they're under siege by us because we're reaching across the line and buying lands within their boundary. And we also recently resolved or set in motion a resolution of some boundary adjustments in two or three places where the historic you know, the boundary line was this ridge line to that ridge line. Well, the ridge line's not well defined, and there were some divisions that lopped over that we entitled, but we're in their county and vice versa. So we're trying to establish a better rapport. I thought it was very successful. The 910 is beautiful. Jess Kirby led us on a tour, and it's a great success story, I think. And I think everybody loved it and enjoyed each other's company.
All right. So the property does stay greenbelt, and Morgan County will receive tax money based on those greenbelt values?
I think that we were negotiating an interlocal agreement that would hold them harmless for loss of tax revenue so that they would be able to continue to collect whatever they were prior to our ownership plus a small annual escalator. I don't know the status of that. I don't also know whether we're going to be in Greenbelt officially or not in their county. So I know we are working to try to hold them harmless so that their tax roll isn't impinged by our ownership.
Okay. Any idea what Morgan County was receiving in tax revenues?
Yeah, I think it's less than $1,000.
Okay.
It's not a lot of money. It was in the green belt there, and it's not a big amount.
Okay. So what's the council's role now in the future of the property, now that it's been purchased and the conservation easement put into place?
Well, the topic du jour is a management plan that I'm told is, since our money, we got $40 million from the Forest Legacy, which is USDA, that was routed to the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands of the Department of Natural Resources of Utah government, state government. And so so they're sort of the custodians, they were the conduit for receiving the money, and we're proposing a management plan to them that will be adopted and administered, enforced, I guess, by the state, by Forestry, Fire, and State Lands. So that's the current topic, but ongoing, I think, we own the property. We'll be, overseeing we will be hiring the managers and doing the management and funding the management and stuff, but the initial management plan has to be approved by Forestry, Fire, and State Lands.
All right. I mean, I'm guessing we have put together some like annual cost of just maintaining this property. Of course, we've got open space bonds to pay off, but I mean, with just the management and again, the repairs that would need to be done.
You know, I was told yesterday that we've received $48 million in grants, including the $40 million from Forest Legacy. So I think a lot of the capital costs have been paid for by others. Our salaries, the salaries of our staff and their tools and things, I don't have a budget for it, but I think we've been remarkably adept at getting some grant money.
Okay. Chris, anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's been pretty thorough today, Leslie.
Okay. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Have a great day. Thanks.
That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio with a look at the second quarter real estate market numbers, I have the CEO of the Park City Board of Realtors, Jennifer Amati, along with Board President Gretchen Hutchins. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Maybe I can ask both of you how you would describe the Park City real estate market right now.
I mean, personally, I would describe it as really stabilizing. What we're seeing is that buyers are still interested, sellers are still selling. There is an increase in inventory, but that's just allowing choice. And so what we're seeing is that people are taking their time, they're making really thoughtful decisions, but they are still moving forward.
Yeah. What would you have to say, Jennifer?
I would agree with Gretchen's sentiments, that the inventory, the case for increasing inventory is not necessarily a bad thing in our market. It is providing some opportunity for folks to maybe take their time when making some choices. We are still seeing that there is a demand for for properties that here, our lifestyle is just so attractive to everyone across the country. So while it might seem a little bit less movement forward as it has been in the past, we're still very optimistic and hopeful as we move into the next few quarters of the year.
Okay, and looking at the numbers quickly, I mean, it showed the total market generating $1.35 billion in 2026 sales second quarter, a 7% increase over 2025 second quarter, and 10% more transactions. So that's healthy.
It is. And I think one of the things that we've noticed, too, that was really surprising is the amount of land that is sold in the last quarter. I can see your face going, yes, I was going to address that. Definitely one of the surprising stories from our statistics that we found. It's just, for some reason, land has been a lot, generating a lot of interest. I'm sure Gretchen, who's on the field, could probably speak more to that. But that was, a really surprising statistic to us last quarter.
Yeah. Gretchen, any guesses for why the vacant land sales exploded? The numbers I see up 46% in the number of parcels sold year over year and 74% in dollar volume. That's significant.
That is significant. I think what that's really indicating is the confidence in our market, and with buyers coming in, with developers looking, with the potential of what Park City will be over the next 5, 10 years and beyond. We really see strong consumer confidence, and that is indicative of our land sales and people placing value on the fact that they can use this kind of softer time to build and have that ramp up on pricing before the Olympics.
Yeah, I didn't have enough time to look at where that vacant land sale is happening, but I'm guessing it's over there in the Wasatch County area?
It is largely in the Wasatch County, simply because there is availability there. Mm-hmm. But we are still seeing strong sales, even in Park City proper, and anywhere that land is available, people are interested in buying. Promontory certainly saw an increase as well.
Okay, so how would you describe it? I mean, is it a buyer's market, a seller's market?
Honestly, depends on your product. I think you'll see it still
it
be a, it really does. You'll see it be a seller's market for those that are really well priced, that are newly redone or new construction in a really great location, something that has amenities, something that has views. Those are still moving very, very quickly. For something that might need a little bit more love or attention, you'll see that be a buyer's market, and buyers have time to really decide and choose and make wise decisions for their families and their futures.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I think what you're seeing too is that buyers have the ability to be more choosy at this point, which I think speaks to why land has been such a mover and shaker in our market. People that are in the luxury space will wait for quality over quantity, and so when you are able to buy land and build what you want on that property, that's where I think people are really drawn to those land purchases. So to Gretchen's point, if you have a property that has all the finishes that a luxury buyer is looking for, it's going to be a home that is not going to languish on the MLS or on the market, but properties that maybe are a little bit older, need some more, rehab and refurbishment, it's going to lean more towards, a buyer's choice. And if it's priced well, it'll sell, where it needs to. So pricing is still always the most important topic when it comes to selling a home in our market, in any market.
Hmm. So who's buying Park City homes today?
You'd be really surprised. They're still coming from all of the areas that we regularly think about. That's California, that's Texas, Chicago, New York. I mean, truly Park City is on the map. People are finding that it's very easy to get here. It's very consumer friendly. It's great for families. It's great for individuals. There's something for everyone. In fact, I just met with a seller or a buyer from California yesterday, and it was the fact that it feels like it's a little bit of a buyer's market, that interest rates are a little higher, that they're thinking now is actually a really great time to step into the market, that they might be able to pick up something for maybe a lower price, even at a higher interest rate, that they'll be able to adjust that within a couple of years to get it down to an interest rate that they want. But they're thinking now is a really great time rather than waiting for an interest rate to come down, but prices will go up at that time.
Yeah. Are you seeing sellers adjust their expectations, you know, when it comes to
this? Absolutely. Sellers are definitely having to adjust their expectations and to be patient. I mean, we're really seeing buyers come back 3, 4, upwards of 6, 7, 8 times. You know, as I talk with my fellow realtors about what that looks like, they're taking their time. They're really making sure that this makes sense, not just for today, but for their future. And they're really thinking about what this home will look like, not only for them in their 50s, 60s, 70s, but how that passes down to their kids, what that looks like for family gatherings. And so they're being much more thoughtful.
All right, let's talk a little bit about inventory. You had mentioned that we've got more than we've had, certainly in years. What does that look like? I mean, do we still have all price, you know, pieces?
Absolutely. You'll still find something in every single price point and for every single buyer. As I like to say, there's no bad neighborhoods. It just depends on your lifestyle. And so there is still very much something for everyone. And I think that's where the importance of using a realtor who's really familiar, that's associated with the Park City Board, is so important, because they do know where to help direct buyers that make sense, and also what's not on the market that might be coming soon.
And mortgage rates, as you mentioned, I mean, they're still higher than they were a few years ago. How much is that kind of still influencing buying decisions?
It is certainly influencing, especially for those who are primary home buyers. But that said, I think people are also settling into this being the new reality, not something that's going to adjust quickly. And so they're realizing that it's still better to have something and play the long game than to wait. I mean, it was really great when our interest rates were in the high 2s, 3s, but we also saw prices skyrocket. So what is that trade-off? It's always better to get in the home. And our year over year shows that it's still a financially wise decision.
Mm-hmm. Right. Prices are increasing.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's a cost to waiting, for sure.
There is a cost to waiting.
Yeah. So for those, you know, who may be buying their first home, I mean, how challenging is it? I mean, do we, one, have the product that they can afford? And what is it that they're looking for? I mean, do they still want the 4-bedroom, 3-bath, you know, with a yard?
I'm so glad you asked that, Leslie, because that's where I think sometimes we get it wrong as far as developers are concerned. I think they are building for what they may want or what they wanted growing up, what they saw growing up. I find that less and less people want the single family home with the yard and the 4 bedrooms and the 3.5 bathrooms. I mean, myself, for the longest time, I lived in a townhome because I didn't want to take care of the maintenance of the home. I wanted my free time to be my free time and to be able to really enjoy Park City and why I live here. And I think we're missing the mark a little bit in our development. I think people would really appreciate more condo and townhome lifestyle where they can spend their free time hiking, biking, skiing, doing the things that we really love. And I think that really would help with our infill issues, to where we're not taking away open space. We're using the lands that we have. We're infilling in those areas and creating something that is a win-win for all sides.
Okay, so are builders, do you think, responding, though, to what today's buyers are looking for?
We're starting to see that change a little bit. You know, I remember a couple of years ago when I was down at the state capitol, the developers were like, we're only doing single family homes. And I raised my hand and I said, are you sure that's what people want? And it was really interesting being back at legislative this year to hear that shift into suddenly we were now talking townhomes again, which I am thrilled to hear. Is that enough or moving quickly? I don't know. But also some of that has to do with our density. So maybe it's a real conversation between our council and our developers to say, let's have less landfill and more density in certain areas so that our open spaces can stay our open spaces. And the land that we have set aside for development can be utilized in ways that really make sense for what people are asking for and what they can afford.
Right. Jennifer, I mean, looking at the second quarter report, I mean, what's your takeaway?
My takeaway is that, Park City is becoming it already was a nuanced market, but it continues to remain that way. When we talk about the Park City market, in air quotes, it's not one size fits all. For me, working at the association, it's really important that we get the message out there that working with a knowledgeable local realtor is more important now than ever, and it's always been important. But our neighborhoods and these pockets that we have, have the different neighborhoods or different density or different, style of homes, having a realtor that understands the buyer or the seller's needs and can appropriately match those two is so important, because there is no one size fits all here in Park City.
All right. And looking ahead through the rest of the year, Gretchen, what's your crystal ball say?
I mean, I'm still very bullish on the Park City market. I think I will be for many, many years to come. As we see people that are willing to start take on projects, willing to look at what's happening, buying the land and building, we're definitely going to see a continued strong market. It might take a little bit longer than we're used to as far as agents, but people are still coming. That's not stopping anytime soon.
Okay. Are you still seeing those multi-offers on some properties?
We really are. It's very interesting. Those things that are priced well and in great locations, amenitized, they will often still see multiple offers. And those things that aren't, that's where we have real buyer opportunity.
Okay. Any other thoughts before I let you go?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Leslie. We're really happy to be here.
Yeah, that's Gretchen Hudgens, president of the Park City Board of Realtors, and Jennifer Amani, the CEO. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, a new film festival is coming to Park City less than a year after the Sundance Film Festival left its 40-year home for Colorado. Park City Film will roll out the red carpet for the inaugural Park City Film Festival this fall with a focus on independent film and emerging creative voices. Starting October 23rd, the three-day event will feature 8 films, including 4 documentaries, 3 narrative features, and 1 short film. The festival will also include several filmmaker gatherings, panel discussions, and post-screening Q&As. All screenings will be held at the Jim Sandy Auditorium in the Park City Library. The festival lineup, panel schedule, and tickets will be released August 17th. And the annual Park City Arts Festival on Main Street begins Friday. Organizers are asking festival goers to bike, walk, and take public transit. Traffic patterns are changing, and some roads and parking lots that you're used to will be closed. The Bob Wells and Brew Pub parking lots are closed today through Sunday. Main Street, Heber Avenue, Sweet Alley, and the remaining surface lots on Sweet Alley are closed to cars early Friday morning through Sunday night. Southbound Deer Valley Drive shifts to accommodate a bus lane, leaving 1 lane for regular traffic over the weekend. Visitors and locals can park for free at the Richardson Flat Park and Ride with free buses to and from Old Town every 15 minutes. Park City High School, the school district on Kearns Boulevard, and Park City Mountain Resort also offering free parking and free public transit throughout the festival. Parking at the China Bridge Garage will be $9 an hour Friday through Sunday. The festival's bike valet will be located on 7th Street. All roads reopen when the festival ends Sunday night. Well, Park City Ski and Snowboard hosting its second annual Backyard Bash later this month. And in the studio with details, I have the executive director of Park City Ski and Snowboard, Elias Lewis. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How is everything?
Good.
Yeah?
Good. Yeah. So I think this is your first full month at Park City Ski and Snowboard?
Correct. You're getting me on day 4. So my head is full and spinning of everything youth sport and everything that Park City Ski and Snowboard does really well. And I have a list here of the great people that work for the club on talking about the Backyard Bash. It's an exciting time for everybody. Families are slowly coming back from their summer vacations. The school's going to start here in a couple weeks. And again, with the city and everything that goes on in the winter, it's as we kind of think, it's fundraising season. So yeah. Everybody's getting really excited. But it's going to be a lot of fun. The kids are back in town. We're going to, registration's open for all of our programs, but, with the great support and a great friend and supporter, Mike Engel, he's offered up his backyard for the second year in a row to allow us to do a really fun, casual event fundraiser. It's a silent live auction, but it's more of a gathering in the backyard I'll be talking a little bit. We'll have a couple of our athletes there speaking about what the program meant to them and what it means to them. And it's a fundraiser to come out and learn about the sports or get connected with the alumni or people that are just very excited about winter sport, winter Olympic sport, and kids in the program. So,
yeah, as I mentioned, the second year, well, there was a great turnout for the inaugural event. So tell us when, where, and how much.
So it is August 20th, the night of August 20th. I believe it starts at 5. You can register for the event. It's $65 per person. You can go to our website, parkcityss.org. I don't have the exact address because, you know, I'm one of those old Park City guys that just know where places are. But it's behind the high school on Lucky John Drive. And I'll have the address for everybody. It's on the website. It's a fun night. It's going to be catered by Alex Brazerol from Stein Erickson Lodge, a Swiss-style meal, kind of getting into the, you know, the Alpine feel of things. We have a live auction. We have silent auction. Like I said, there'll be a little bit of information about our programs and what people can expect. And it is just a really fun night. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to make it last year. But the generous host, Mike Engel, he's just a great supporter, and he's just a lot of fun to be around.
Well, that's what I was going to wonder. This is just something he wanted to do because he just opens it up.
Just opens up his backyard. I mean, he's very enthusiastic about winter Olympic sport, and he's very enthusiastic about kids participating in it. Unfortunately, I don't know all the history, but meeting him over the last couple weeks while we've started to get this, the second annual, together, you can just tell his enthusiasm and passion for just kids participating in winter sport. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So is this a 21 and older event or?
No, all ages welcome.
Okay.
All ages welcome.
All right. So the money raised through this, where does that go?
So the money right now, all the money fundraised out of this will go into our operations right now. And I'm still learning a little bit of how the system's set up, but the tuition covers pretty much coaching. So tuitions for the programs cover coaching, and then we need obviously some money to support all the operations and everything else that we do in the program. A little bit like school systems, right? It's usually tuition covers the teacher salaries, but there's a bunch of programming and a bunch of other things that are required to run excellent programs, and that's what the fund money was go to.
Yeah. And you, again, just being new, I'm not sure you understand the history, but I mean, is it becoming more challenging to find the coaches? That it used to be pretty easy. I mean, you just had all these ski bums that, you know, were available,
right?
But
right.
And now it's just so expensive to live here.
I think expense is one thing, but also expectations, right? As society, we've grown, and as we know more about coaching and we know about youth sport and understanding what kids desire, there also comes a lot of certifications, right? We need to have the right coaches. There's also a little bit about society grows up a little bit, and we have to be very protective, right? There's a lot more awareness about kids' mental health, and there's also a lot of awareness about, you know, improprieties between kids and coaches, and understanding how, you know, coaches need certain certifications. In our world, it's called safe sport, to make sure the kids feel safe, to make sure if there's any improprieties between kids and other kids, there's a system. So coaching certifications are very important. However, I would tell you that, you know, one of the great things that I've heard and what I can't wait to see in action is there's a huge support of volunteer coaches at the really young ages, right? Our program now goes down to about 7 years old. And in some of the resorts, at that age, you need to have an adult on the lift. So there's a fun way for parents or people in the community that want to volunteer. And again, with today's society, you have to take a couple classes to make sure you have some of the light certifications to volunteer with young kids. But there's great programs out there where you just end up riding up the lift with these young kids because of liabilities, and some of the resorts and some of the training facilities require that. So at the young age, there's a great opportunity for people and parents to come out and volunteer and understand what their kids are doing across our 9 sports. But as we get, you know, as we get more sophisticated in the training, obviously there's coaches certifications. And correct, I mean, in the way of the world in Park City, it is expensive to live. So that also becomes a constraint. So I think it is a lot tougher to get coaches today than it was back even in my day.
Yeah. Park City certainly has a long history of producing elite athletes, yourself included. I mean, how does that success begin, though, at this grassroots level here?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's almost an economy of scale, not to get business-oriented, but if you open the opportunity for the most amount of kids that you think are in this community to even learn about the sport and to catch a passion about the sport. You know, my goal and my vision for our program is, you know, we have as many kids as we want. And at the young age, parents just want to, you know, expose their kids to all the sports. And Park City, the backyard is the mountains and it snows. So if we get as many kids as we can in that funnel and we create the passion and we create the inspiration for these kids to continue sport, then as you go, humans always will whittle down to what their interests are, and it may not always be alpine skiing. You know, mine was from an age, you know, 10 to today. However, but our program needs to be cultivated that we know how to handle the numbers at the young age, and we have a very strong program, a very strong coaching, and very sophisticated training schedules that at the point when it gets to 14 to 16, you start polishing their talents and you keep them engaged and you keep them passionate about the sport, because who knows, it may get to where they want to be in excellence. But everything in life, there's no guarantee. To me, it's all about the journey, it's all about the strive, and it's all about the lessons you learn to pick yourself up when things don't go your way. And I think as long as we have a program that's solidified at the young age and can be solidified at the very last polishing stages before they go to a national team or maybe a college, or maybe they want to use those skills in a different industry, that's the vision of my program.
Okay. Again, this is happening Thursday, August 20th. People can go online, purchase a ticket. I'm guessing at some point there is a maximum.
There is a maximum. I don't know the maximum. I know we had over 200 last year. We're reaching for more than that. I do know the backyard has room for, you know, 10 to 20 more. I don't think we've reached the maximum. I know there's tickets still available, but when they do sell out, they sell out.
Okay, ParkCitySS.org.
ParkCitySS.org, correct. That is our website.
Okay, Elias, anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, the only other thing that I would mention is we have our Moose on the Loose, which is the young kids trail running program. The next one is August 15th, and that's over in the Quinns Junction area. That's an amazing fun time in the morning. A lot of young kids that I still can't believe. You know, we have over 150 show up all the time. There's a 1K, a 3K, and a 5K race. Pancakes at the end, and just a lot of fun to have the families get out there and enjoy the mountains in the summer, just trail running. So that's on August 15th too for everybody out there.
Okay, Elias, right. Great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Appreciate it.
Elias Lewis again is the executive director of Park City Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Taking a look now at some local news. Heber City residents will soon see steeper fines for parking illegally. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on that new policy.
City Prosecutor Mark Smedley says Heber is rethinking its approach to parking enforcement. He told the City Council Tuesday fines for parking illegally will be $50 instead of $25.
It's intended to create a meaningful deterrent because the prior amount was so low that people would park illegally as a convenience.
The city is also imposing late fees. Fines will double after 2 weeks and go up again after 40 days. Although tickets are getting more expensive, Heber will now classify parking violations as infractions instead of misdemeanors. Smedley says people would often fight misdemeanor charges in court, but he thinks that's a frivolous use of government resources.
Drop it down to an infraction, people relax. They're less likely to fight it.
The council unanimously approved the new rules. The policy changes are in line with what other Utah towns do. Park City also ups the fine if people don't pay their parking tickets on time, while Ogden and West Valley City provide a discount if a fine is paid early. Heber City is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Working with local partners, Summit County has opened 4 new neighborhood recycling drop-off sites, making it easier for residents to recycle household glass and mixed recyclables. The sites build on existing efforts with Recycle Utah Center and Park City Community Foundation's Zero Food Waste Initiative. Summit County Solid Waste Supervisor Tim Loveday says the county's four new drop-off sites, together with its curbside recycling program and other operations at the 3 Mile landfill, are key to reaching the county's overall goal of 7,500 tons of diverted waste per year. All of these efforts, he says, are crucial to extending the life of the 3 Mile landfill, saving taxpayers millions in future waste disposal costs.
If we're going to be able to extend the life of that landfill, which is very important financially to the county and its residents, we've got to start now. We can't wait to the last minute.
The four drop-off sites are located across the county with more to come. There's one at the Ledges Event Center in Colville, the Camas Park and Ride, the Eckerhill Park and Ride, and at the 3 Mile landfill. The locations, he says, were determined from a survey collected from 800 residents.
We looked at the commute routes, where people were going. The Camas one, yes, that's in Camas, but everybody from Francis is going to the grocery store and has to drive by there. So 3 Mile Canyon, we were already there, up and operating with a lot of other recyclables, so we just added glass and commingled there because people come in to drop off bigger stuff. They can bring their recycles as well. And of course, Ecker is a high density area. That one's going to be probably our biggest driver on volume.
Future locations, he says, will include Silver Summit and Park City as Recycle Utah prepares to relocate from its Woodbine Way facility to a new center near Home Depot. You can see a map of the new locations and a list of the accepted materials online at kpcw.org.